We're over here.
That's better. Glad you found us. I'm Andy Griffith. How many of you can remember huddling close to the big radio in the living room while Dad expertly tuned the dials and the sound of static magically gave way to the voices of Fred Allen, Jack Benny, The Shadow, Fibber McGee and Molly, The Green Hornet, Jack Armstrong, Edgar Bergen, and Buck Rogers? From some distant spot in the night, these and other programs miraculously came to life right in your very own home. Well, that's what radio used to be like. Nowadays, radio's a constant companion, a good friend who oftentimes is taken for granted. Turn it on, flip the stations, you'll hear phone-in psychiatrists, freeway conditions, school closings, ball games, all news, beautiful music, not so beautiful music, fast talking DJs. I won't even mention those strange headsets the kids and joggers like to wear. All in all, radio is as modern and mobile as the people it serves. As for radio's future, we can be sure that it will continue to inform and entertain listeners for generations to come. And that gives me a good feeling. So how much do we really know about this medium that shares so much of our everyday lives? Well, we're going to have a chance to find out because in a moment, we'll take the first national radio aptitude test. And that's only the beginning of our problems.
Mutual Radio Theater, a new adventure in radio listening. 5 nights of exceptional entertainment every week. Brought to you in Elliot Lewis's production of the Mutual Radio Theater. Our story, The First National Radio Aptitude Test by Mark Trella. Our star, Alan Young.
This is certainly an important event in radio history. Imagine to actually take part in the very first National Radio Aptitude Test. And it's now my distinct pleasure to introduce to you the man most qualified to administer this epoch-making event, Mr. Buddy Binder.
Thank you, Mr. Griffith. I'm Buddy Binder, and I'll be administering the first National Radio
Aptitude... Excuse me. Is this the first National Radio Aptitude Test?
Why, yes, it is.
Have you got a license to administer this test?
No, I don't.
Then I'll have to close you down.
You can't do that. We haven't even started.
Sorry, I got my orders.
Orders? Who are you, anyway?
I'm Martin Morton. Morton Martin. Anyway, I'm with Equality in Evaluating Intelligence Operations. You probably know us better as EIEIO.
Oh.
No, just 1-0.
Well, so why are you closing down the test?
I told you. You need a special permit to administer a radio aptitude test.
Couldn't you make an exception just this one time? This is an epoch-making event. There must be millions of people out there hanging on our every word.
No kidding?
We really deserve special consideration.
Okay, I'll tell you what. I'll let you continue the show if you let me help you.
Well, I really don't need any help.
All right, I'll have to shut everything down.
Wait. Did you... You sure you know how to do this? I mean, you haven't even seen a script. You don't even know what we're trying to do here.
It's a cinch. I make my living administering tests. Here, give me your script and I'll show you what I mean.
Well, all right.
Welcome, everyone, to the first National Radio Amateur Hour.
That's aptitude test.
That's what I said. Anyway, you listeners will need to supply a few items for the test. First of all, you'll need some paper and 2 number 3 pencils. Make that 3 number 2 pencils. Next, number the left-hand column of the page from 1 through 27 and the right-hand margin from 28 through 54. Oh, wait a minute. That's wrong. Let's start all over. You'll need a wastebasket, a yellow raincoat, and several feet of insulation. No, wait. Don't anyone panic. We really are going to take this test. I didn't get a master's degree in test administration for nothing. Well, it was almost nothing, but that's beside the point. Ah, here we are. I've got it now.
Phew. I'm glad we got rid of him. And the way we did it was a radio technique known as the fade. Here's how it works. As I'm talking, my voice starts to disappear. You hear? And then the engineer makes my voice return to normal. That's a fade. Now, remember that word, because we'll be returning to it from time to time. Now then, are you ready to take the test? Good. The first question is true or false. Here we go. Johann von Radio invented the radio in 1834. Got that? All right. Next question, also true or false. At the time of his death, Johann von Radio had been developing a radical new invention, color radio.
I will answer that question.
Who are you?
Who am I? Well, I'm the greatest inventor west of the Pecos, east of the Monongahela, south of the Yaconucani, and north of Tehachapi.
But who are you?
I am Colonel Haphazard, sir, the greatest inventor what ever lived, by none.
If you're so great, how come I've never heard of you?
I've got a crummy PR man.
Well, what are you doing here?
I have come here to set the record straight, allay the alleged allegations, dispute the insidious insinuations, and get me some free publicity to boot.
Now, wait a minute. The first national radio aptitude test will not be turned into a forum for crackpots.
Who are you calling a crackpot?
Present company included.
So, do you realize I could involve you in lengthy litigation? What you just said is libelous, bilious, blasphemous, and injurious to my good name. I just might see you in court.
Calm down, Colonel.
Calm down, sir? When a gentleman of my background is insulted in public?
Just what is your background, Colonel?
Well, I'm glad you asked. Now, normally, I do not toot my own horn. But since my honor is at stake, I'm going to make an exception. To begin with, I have made countless contributions to society and civilization as we know it.
Such as?
For starters, I made the see-through diaper.
The see-through diaper?
Not only that. During the war years, I was in charge of research and development in the area of office supplies for the military.
Office supplies?
As a direct result of my own personal efforts, we were the first nation to develop the disposable wastebasket.
I think I read about that. Didn't you receive federal funds to develop the disposable wastebasket?
No, sir. The federal funds come rolling in after they realized what a genius I was. I was the very first recipient of the Ulysses S. Grant. And right now, I am directing my keen eye into the recreational field. On the drawing boards, I have got the first collapsible tennis racket and the first inflatable baseball bat.
Well, that's marvelous, Colonel. But what does all of this have to do with the first national radio aptitude test?
I'm here to answer that question about color radio.
Oh, that was just a gag. The writer threw it in for laughs. Nobody would ever be dumb enough to believe there was such a thing as color radio.
Now, that is too bad, because I'm here to tell you that color radio is as real as the flap on a flapjack, and you folks don't know what you've been missing.
If what you say is true, Colonel, that would be a major breakthrough.
No, that's a Colonel breakthrough. Oh. Don't you forget it.
Well, could you give our listeners a preview of color radio? Just a little tiny one for our millions of listeners.
Millions of listeners? All right. Now, first, the folks at home will need a few ordinary household items to convert their present sets to receive the ultra-high-frequency color radio signals.
This won't take long, will it, Colonel? Our time is limited.
Won't take but a minute. And it's real simple. Here's what you're going to need, folks. You get yourself a pair of pliers, some chicken wire, and a jar of fireflies. No, wait a minute. Make that a pound of lard, some stove bolts, and a straight razor. No, that ain't right neither, is it? No, it ain't.
I told you we'd be returning to the fade. Now we'll wrap up this portion of the test with a true or false statement. One advantage radio has over television is that radio shows are rarely interrupted by commercials.
Welcome back to the first National Radio Aptitude Test, and I do believe we're ready for the second part of the test.
Buddy Binder again. I'd like to introduce another technique, which we'll be using during the show. It's called reverb. Now, when I say...
Oh, excuse me. Is this the first National Radio Aptitude Test?
Why, yes, it is.
Have you got a reverb license?
I wasn't aware that we needed
it. Oh, sure you do. It says so right here, you see.
Eh? Yes. Oh, I see. Who are you, anyway?
Martin Morton.
But he was just here.
No. That was Morton Martin. Oh. People confuse us all the time because we look alike.
And I suppose you're also with E-I-E-I-O?
No. I'm with A-E-I-O-U. And sometimes Y. That's audio enforcement in organizations unwholesome.
I take issue with that remark. This show is completely wholesome. And what does the Y mean?
Why?
Because I'd like to know.
No, that's what it means. It's an inside joke.
Oh, well, I'm glad I'm outside. Look, could I ask you to do me a favor?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, good. Just say a few words to our national audience.
Me?
Yes, you. There must be millions of listeners. Go ahead, say anything that comes into your mind.
Well, gee. All right. First, I'd like to say hello to all my family and friends. Mom, Dad, Sam, Don.
Ladies and gentlemen, I apologize for these interruptions. If it wasn't for the fade, we'd be in serious trouble. Now, I'd like to continue, if I may, with the following question. Johann von Radio has been called the father of modern radio. Who is the mother of modern radio? Give up? The mother of modern radio is none other than Johann's mother, Mrs. Olga von Radio. And as a special treat, Mrs. von Radio is with us in the studio. Hello, Mrs. von Radio, and welcome to the first National Radio Aptitude Test.
It is my pleasure. I just love to talk with young people. And not many of them know my Johann invented the radio.
It's a shame. He certainly hasn't received the credit due him for his invention.
He couldn't get any credit when he was inventing it either.
It's distressing to hear that one of the great minds of our day lived in abject poverty.
I abject? We lived in Vienna.
Yeah, I mean, he had an impoverished background.
We had lots of money, if that is what you mean.
I don't understand. You had plenty of money, and yet Johann had to scrimp and beg in order to finance his inventions. How can you justify such shabby treatment of a genius?
You call him a genius. We call him Dummkopf.
I find that hard to believe.
What else would you call somebody who invented synthetic strudel?
Well,
a stainless steel glockenspiel?
Well...
A vault of all vaults?
He was obviously ahead of his time. Great minds are always misunderstood.
No, there was no misunderstanding. This kid was strictly weird. Once he even tried to put my little schnauzer, Rudy, into orbit.
Was the attempt successful?
Are you kidding? Rudy crash-landed in the Vienna woods. He has never forgiven Johann.
That's understandable.
The whole experience left Rudy very bitter. He still sees an analyst.
I'm sorry to hear that.
At times he gets even vicious. Have you ever seen a vicious schnauzer?
I don't think I can even say it.
Go ahead. Say it 5 times, real fast.
Yeah. Vicious schnauzer, vicious schnauzer, vicious schnauzer.
Impossible to do. In my spare time, I play with the tongue twisters. I got another one. Sally string strudel in the street.
Mrs. von Radio, could we please return to the topic at hand?
Ah, yes, the topic at hand, of course. What is it?
Your boy, Johann. When did he build his first radio?
Oh, let me see. He built it after he got his first motor car.
Why is that?
The car didn't come with a radio, so Johann had to
invent one.
He also invented white walls and the glove compartment.
For his gloves, of course.
No. That is where he put the radio. I told you, he was a weird kid.
It certainly sounds like quite a car.
Yeah. You wouldn't catch me in it. He even put in Venetian blinds.
That does sound a bit unusual.
Also installed a lower-level leather louver.
A lower-level leather louver?
Go and say it 5 times real fast.
Lower-level leather louver, lower-level leather louver.
That's another tongue twister for you.
Yes, it is. Well, that's all the tongue twisting we have time for today, Mrs. von Radio.
That is Mrs. von Radio, Dummkopf.
Sorry, I seem to be wearing my slurs.
I got just a thing for that. Say this 5 times real fast. Freud's Vater Fiat Frankfurtus.
We interrupt this broadcast for a test of the inoperable broadcast system. This has been a test of the inoperable broadcast system. If it had been an actual alert, you would have been instructed to run for your life.
This is Larry Reason. At the moment I'm standing on the hood of an imported car, a scant 100 yards away from a chain-link fence which surrounds the 7-kilometer island nuclear facility and shopping plaza. Inside this concrete monstrosity unfolds a drama of far-reaching consequence. Earlier in the day, a Hollywood movie crew arrived to film a hypothetical scene in which a nuclear reactor would melt down and destroy the Earth. The film's director, a rather large, bearded man clad in black, informed the staff that he wished to direct an actual real-life meltdown. The staff refused. A struggle ensued. A gun was pulled. A shot rang out. I said a shot rang out. That does it. A gunshot rang out. Could we please have another sound effects, man? Thank you.
In case you've been hiding under a television set for the last 30 years, the preceding excerpt was a paraphrase of radio's most famous hoax, a hoax perpetrated by the distinguished gentleman seated next to me. He is the enfant terrible, the toast of several mediums, and the voice of chocolate pudding. Let's have a nice round of applause for Mr. Orson Welles. Hello, Mr. Welles. It is my pleasure to welcome you to the first National Radio Aptitude Test.
Pick a card.
Pardon me?
Pick a card. Any card.
Why, Mr. Welles?
Because I begin all of my appearances with a card trick. It's part of my mystique.
But you can't do card tricks on radio.
I can do anything I want. I'm a genius. Now, pick a card.
Yes, Mr. Welles.
Show it to the audience. Good. Now, insert it in the deck. Now, I say the magic word, rosebud. And presto, here is your card. Thank you. Thank you.
That wasn't my card, Mr. Welles.
Of course it was. How would you like me to saw you in half?
No, thank you, sir, no. Could we please talk about your colorful and outstanding career in radio?
Since you put it that way. That little gem you just heard was recorded in a cab on the way to a cancellation. I composed most of it off the top of my head, which is one reason why it is such a stunning tour de force. There are other reasons, my skillful direction, my brilliant selection of music, my exquisite sense of timing, and so forth, and so forth. Yes.
What was it like to work in radio in those days, Mr. Welles?
Oh, my dear man, the earth has never seen, nor will it see again, the assemblage of talent which radio boasted in those days. It was grand. We were all geniuses. We treated each other with respect and sometimes bought each other lunch. Radio has always been my first love.
Yes. Well, with radio enjoying a resurgence in popularity, Mr. Welles, is there a chance that you might consent to reappear in your favorite medium?
Regrettably, several things would prevent me from making a full-scale return to radio. First, as you so shrewdly observed, one can't do card tricks on radio. And second, for the past few years, I have been immersed in a highly personal film project.
Yes, I know. It's called The Other Bag of Wind.
Correct. It is a witty, acerbic, sometimes exasperating look at our society through the eyes of an aging movie director. At the risk of spoiling the ending, which involves a deck of cards, I might tell you that the film structure cleverly lampoons the film community and a representative cross-section of our society.
It sounds fascinating. When will it be finished?
I intend to leave it unfinished as a tongue-in-cheek comment on the state of filmmaking today.
So you might say that all's wells that doesn't end wells.
Possibly. Now then, pick a card, any card.
True or false? The Mutual Radio Theater will continue after these messages.
Have we got a special treat in store for you. Buddy Binder, the host of the first National Radio Aptitude Test, is also a fanatic collector of old radio programs. He stores them in an abandoned root cellar outside Yakima, Washington, and only listens to them during electrical storms. Buddy has graciously consented to share some of these great radio classics with us. What'll we be hearing first, Buddy?
Well, Mr. Griffith, I thought we'd start off with an old-fashioned radio quiz show. Here we go.
Hello, this is George Phenomena speaking. And it's time once again for that delightfully entertaining half hour that pits husbands against their spouses, You Bet Your Wife. And here's your host, that witty, urbane man of a thousand quips, that suave, debonair Latin loony, that not-so-gay caballero from south of the border down Argentina way, the one, the only, Gaucho!
Thank you, thank you, thank you. And I'd like to thank you, George, for that introduction.
It's always my pleasure, Gaucho.
I said I'd like to thank you, but I don't think that introduction really fit my stature. And if you've ever had your stature fitted, you'll know what I'm talking about. Well, who are our first contestants, George?
Well, Gaucho, our contestants are Howard and Emma Wilson. Come in and meet Gaucho, folks.
Hello, folks. Before you open your mouths, I'll have George lower his voice in a confidential manner and tell our audience what the secret word is.
The secret word is albatross.
Okay, folks. The secret word is a common everyday item, something you'd find around the house. And if you say the secret word, you win a freezer full of ground beef. And if you don't want a freezer full of ground beef, you can have a freezer full of ground.
I'm a vegetarian, Gaucho.
Really? I thought you were a Republican. Emma, do you take this man to be a lawful-wedded husband?
I do.
That's too bad, because I'm available after the show. Pardon me, Emma. Those of you at home and in the studio audience, do you find this couple as dull and uninteresting as I do? George, give these folks some tacky luggage and get rid of them.
Certainly, Gaucho.
Boy, I'm sure glad to get rid of that couple. They were like an albatross around my neck.
Gaucho, you said the secret word.
It's secret void. How do you like that? I don't like ground beef. In fact, I'm not too crazy about this show. George, bring out the next couple. For those of you at home, our next contestant has a classy chassis. What's more, she's amply endowed. I once knew a law firm named Amply Endowed. Are you any relation?
No.
Do you have any relations? Would you like some relations? Say, I'll bet you've got a name.
Uh-huh. Isabel.
Isabel what?
Is a bell ringing? Because I don't hear one.
Is this fellow with you your husband?
That's right.
What's his name?
Theodore.
Theodore what?
The door is closed because I can't open it.
Say, don't I know you?
No, that's impossible. I've never been here.
You certainly look familiar. That doughy face, those beady eyes, that Neanderthal brow.
Oh, I never drink the stuff. Hey, when can we win some money?
You look like you could use some money. In fact, you look like you could use a shave. Are you sure your name is Isabel?
Isabel what?
Isabel your name.
How can a bell be my name?
I don't know. What is your name?
Theodore.
I thought that was his name.
He changed it.
I see.
Those are his middle initials.
Why?
That's my middle initial.
All right.
Oh, that's his last name. Did I say the secret word yet?
I can't tell you.
Why not?
It's a secret. What does he want?
He wants to know if he said the secret word yet.
I don't think so. Say, doesn't he ever get on your nerves with that horn?
Oh, sure. But I get on his nerves, too.
So you've both got a lot of nerve. What is it you do that upsets him?
Well, sometimes I act like an albatross.
Congratulations. You just said the secret word albatross and won yourself a freezer full of ground beef.
Oh, albatross can't eat the ground of beef.
Well, feed it to him. He's not an albatross, is he? What did he say?
His mother's maiden name is Albatross.
Now, that's a horse of a different color.
No, that's a albatross.
What is it now?
Hey, doesn't he get a freezer full of ground beef?
Why should I give him a freezer full of ground beef?
He said the secret word.
Are you trying to buffalo me?
He wants ground beef, not the buffalo.
You'll have to come back tomorrow. I'm all out of ground beef and buffalo. What did he say?
He said, okay, he'll take a freezer full of albatross instead.
Buddy Binder again. And here's our rare recording. You can hear the surface noise. A rare recording of one of radio's first sports shows.
If you thought televised golf was boring, just wait until you hear radio bowling. Hello, everyone, and welcome once again to Radio Bowling. As you know, every week we visit a different bowling alley somewhere in this great big country of ours. This week, we find ourselves in the cavernous Echo Park Lanes in California. The Echo Park Lanes boasts the world's most advanced pin-spotting system, as well as the world's longest lanes. If you recall, last week's show ended with Gypsy Joe Abalone facing the always difficult 7-10 split. Joe steps up to the line, cradling that iridescent ball, which is his trademark. He is a picture of intense concentration as he begins his delivery with that peculiar corkscrew motion that has made him the darling of chiropractors everywhere. Boring, wasn't it? Join us next week when we will be radio bowling on the flight deck of the aircraft carrier USS Nimitz.
True or false? The First National Radio Aptitude Test will not be interrupted by these commercial messages.
Andy Griffith again, and here's the spine-tingling conclusion of the First National Radio Aptitude Test, I think.
Thank you, Mr. Griffith. We've still got a lot of ground to cover, and if we're not interrupted anymore, I think we'll be able to do it. So far, so good. Now then, during the last commercial break, I jotted down several multiple-choice questions, and after I give you the questions, we'll be switching to Mary Kay Burfish in New York for the answers. Ready? First question. Radio stations in the East and West differ by the first letter in the station's call letters. Stations in the East begin with W, and stations in the West begin with K. The dividing line which determines East and West is A, the Missouri Compromise, B, the Louisiana Purchase, C, the Panama Canal, D, the Doppler effect. Got that? Here's question number two. The person who plays records at a radio station is called A, Red Snapper, B, the Doppler effect, C, astronaut, D, hockey puck. And now for the final question. The scientific term for the apparent change of frequency of sound waves varying with the relative velocity of the source and observer is A, the Bermuda Triangle, B, Billy Carter, C, the Doppler effect, D, poltergeist. Take it away, Mary Kay.
Thank you, Buddy. The answer to all of the above questions was, of course, the Doppler effect. And we're very fortunate to have with us in the studio the man who is responsible for the discovery of this little understood phenomenon, Mr. Seamus Malarkey. Welcome to the First National Radio Aptitude Test, Mr. Malarkey.
Well, how do you do? My pleasure, lass.
I'd always thought that a man named Doppler discovered the Doppler effect.
Well, that's all part of the misunderstanding that surrounds this little understood phenomenon. And Doppler was stone drunk in a pub in Dublin when I discovered the effect at a peat bog near Killarney.
I'd always thought There weren't any peat bogs near Kalani.
Well, that's all part of the misunderstanding, lass. It's a curse, I tell you. If I may, I'd like to conduct a little experiment.
Yes, be my guest, Mr. Mullarky.
Yes, I'd like to have some of the members of the studio audience explain the Doppler effect. Now, I'll wager that no two give the same answer.
All right, you're on.
You, sir. Yes, you with the sandwich board. Now, what is the Doppler effect?
Oh, isn't that when your money isn't worth as much as you think it is?
Nice try, sir. And you, ma'am, what is the Doppler effect?
That's when you're baking a cake and someone slams a door and the cake falls.
Oh, you're all wrong. It's when you're weightless in outer space.
Quiet! You bunch of goofs! Now, you see what I mean, lass? The Doppler effect clouds men's minds. Oh, curse the day I ever discovered it in a tin mine near Pretoria.
Wait a minute. I thought you said you discovered the effect in a peat bog near Killarney.
You see, lass, it's all part of the misunderstanding that surrounds this little understood phenomenon.
All right, Mr. Mullarky, suppose you provide us with some more information so we can all understand the phenomenon.
Oh, so it's proof you're wanting. A demonstration of this little understood phenomenon, perhaps?
Yes, a demonstration would be nice.
Oh, then a demonstration you shall have, lass. I need a volunteer from the audience, preferably a young lad with a stout heart and a good set of pipes. You, sir, are you with me?
Sure. Why not?
I like your spunk, laddie. Plowing straight ahead into the unknown like this. I'll buy you a pint of stout if you live.
If I live?
Just a little levity to dispel the tension, lad. Now, there's no more danger involved in this demonstration than waving a Catholic flag at a Protestant rally. Now, will you follow me over to the window? There, you too, lass. Now, how high up might you say we are, lass?
Oh, about 35 floors. But I don't see why we need to open a window.
For the demonstration, dearie. Oh, good Lord, how on earth do you breathe this crud? Well, never mind. You all know that as a sound moves closer to you, it rises up in pitch. Well, that's half the Doppler effect. And with the aid of this foreign lad here, I will demonstrate that the converse is also true. Are you ready, me lad?
I think so.
All right. Out on the ledge with you, then.
Like this?
You're a boy after me own heart, laddie. Now, if you'd be so kind as to take one giant step away from the building.
You mean like this?
It was quite a demonstration, Mr. Mullarky. But I'm still not sure I understand the Doppler effect.
Well, it's really something you've got to experience for yourself, lass. Now, out onto the ledge you go.
Oh, well, wait a minute. No, I think I understand.
No. Take one giant step away from the building.
Back to you, bye!
Buddy Binder again, and I can't believe our good fortune. We actually completed an entire section of the test without an interruption. Amazing. While our luck is holding out, I'd like to do some more thought-provoking multiple-choice questions. Ready? Excuse me, please.
Is this the First National Radio Amateur Hour?
Yes, it is. Well, wait a minute. Did you say...
This is the place, boys. Bring it in here.
If you said what I think you said, there's been an awful mistake.
Those crates can go over there, you guys. Sign here, pal.
No, certainly.
Yeah, that's your copy. I see you around.
I don't understand this at all. These crates are addressed to the First National Radio Amateur Hour. Some of them have the logo of Enigmo the Magnificent. What is going on here?
Help! Let me out of here!
I thought I heard something.
I'm in here, inside the steamer trunk!
Sounds like it's coming from the steamer trunk.
Ta-da!
Who, sir, are you?
Enigma the Magnificent, the world's greatest escape artiste.
You are the world's greatest escape artiste?
Sure. Didn't you receive the handbills and hype I sent you?
No, I don't remember receiving
it. Oh, well, no sweat, Chet. I got a whole trunk of them here somewhere, but don't take my word for it. The seeing is in the pudding, as they say, and I'm here to make a believer out of the entire country with my latest death-defying stunt.
And what stunt is that?
I escaped from a room full of insurance salesman.
Well, that's really marvelous, Enigma, but I think there's been a slight misunderstanding.
What kind of misunderstanding?
I think you think that this is the First National Radio Amateur Hour.
So?
Well, it's really the First National Radio Aptitude Test.
A test? Well, that's even better. For a minute, you had me worried. I thought I was going to have to call all my friends and tell them to forget the whole thing.
All of your friends?
Oh, sure. I know loads of talented people. They should be arriving any minute.
Any minute?
That must be them now. Meet Boris Buffon, the Bayonne baritone. This here is Tiny Tina, the tap-dancing toad. This is my brother-in-law, Max, and his train seal, Socrates.
Just remember that subliminal and erogenous facets, while often misunderstood.
And this is Batman Brooksy, the greatest double talk artist this side of Atlantic City. My wife's nephew's constraints in the 6. He should be here any minute, too.
I can hardly wait.
Well, I can't understand where the barbershop quartet is unless they all had to work overtime.
I give up. You win.
Oh, wait a second. Hey, how about some peace and quiet? Now, what were you saying?
I said you win. You can have your First National Radio Amateur Hour.
You really mean it? Hey, gang, did you hear that? Oh, you won't regret this, pal. How soon do you think we can be on the air?
Sooner than we all think, I'm afraid. Anybody in here? Good. At last, no more interruptions, and we can finally take the First National Radio Aptitude Test in peace. Why didn't I think of this earlier? Well, never mind. The important thing is, no more interruptions. All right now. Pencils ready? Good. Let's try another true or false question. What was that?
This is Andy Griffith.
Oh, no.
I'm sorry, buddy, but your time's up.
It can't be, Mr. Griffith. There must be some mistake.
This is radio, buddy. There's just so much time allotted to each show.
This is depressing. My big chance to be a part of an epic-making event. I'll never get another chance, never.
There, buddy. You might get another chance.
You really think so?
I wouldn't bet my life on it, but I think you've got something here.
Darn right we do. With radio, we can do things no one's ever dreamed of. We could do a remote broadcast in the Fiji Islands with 600 college students.
The Mutual Radio Theater is brought to you 5 nights a week at this time. Tonight's original radio play, The First National Radio Aptitude Test, was written by Mark Trella and produced and directed by Fletcher Markle. Your host was Andy Griffith. Our star was Alan Young. Featured in the cast were Marvin Miller, Dawes Butler, Lillian Biaf, Mary Jane Croft, Shepard Menken, Earl Kress, Don Diamond, and Jerry Hausner. The Mutual Radio Theater theme was composed by Nelson Riddle. John Harlan speaking. The Elliott Lewis production of Mutual Radio Theater is a presentation of CVI.
This is Vincent Price. Join us tomorrow. I'll have another story to astonish and mystify you.